Jane Whitbrock, who is Associate Scientist at the Alcohol Research Group, is going to talk about concordance of ICD-10, Y90, and Y91 codes for alcohol intoxication, again, in the Americas.
Okay. Well, let's. How do I go back?
And
I need to say thank you to Jason, who was part of my discussion. And I work at the Alcohol Research with this group. Okay, no disclosures. Okay, before I go into what I'm going to talk about today, just as some little background, I need to do some definitions. So, the ICD is an international standard for the systematic recording, analysis, interpretation, and comparison of mortality and morbidity data cross-culturally across time. So it plays a key role in gathering data. In the 1990s, the ICD-10 added two supplementary codes, and they were the Y90, which was a blood alcohol concentration, usually gathered by a breathalyzer, and they added a Y90 code for a clinical assessment. And I'll say a little bit more about them in a minute. But they showed up in the, the external causes chapter, and in various other little places, there were comments that it looked like you could use them interchangeably. Despite the burden of alcohol-related injury and ED cases, these two codes haven't been used much. And we're not sure why that's the case, and that's true in the U.S., and that's true internationally. So as preparation for the ICD-11, which is underway, questions arise, are the two codes accurately capturing the same phenomena, and do the two codes have common reliability across different drinking cultures? And that's what I'll be looking at a little bit. So I'm just going to walk you through someone that would have come into this study and how this data would be collected. So someone came into the emergency room, they were screened, eligible, consented. Someone would take their blood alcohol concentration level via a breathalyzer. That actual reading then could be placed into one of nine categories that, if used in ER settings, could be then attached to the code that said this person came in with this injury, and we know that this level of BAC went along with that injury. Okay. Next, that person would have been handed off to a clinician who had been trained to assess, and this is where they do the clinical assessment. And so there were 10 signs of intoxication that the person would be rated on. They were rated from none on five levels: none, mild, moderate, severe, very severe. So each of those 10 signs would have been rated. I'm not going to go over the signs. If you want to know them, I can give them to you another time. And based on what was gleaned from that information, the clinician then gave them an assessment with an actual Y90 code, Y91 code. So they could have assessed them as very severe, severe, moderate, mild, or none. Now, the clinical signs of intoxication, you don't add the scores up or anything. It's just purely you rate them based on what you gleaned from that information. You went over to the code in the Y91, and there's some narrative, and that's the narrative that would show on the ICD. They would assess the client at some level of severity. You've seen this already. I used nine countries, and you can see over on the most right column those that reported drinking in the within six hours of the injury event. So you can see Canada, real low rate, and when you look at Brazil and Mexico, in the 6 hour prior drinkers, a higher rate. Okay, now this is where I'll spend a little bit of time on this table because you'll see it in a couple more tables. So, just to orient you, the columns, this is just a 4x4 cross-tabulation table. So, the columns represent the Y91 assessment. So if you add down, you see there are five categories, and we combined severe and very severe because there were very few people in those two categories. So that clinical assessment that I showed you to represents that. And if you add down the columns, you would get the totals. Over in the rows, we have the BAC level, and we collapsed those nine categories into four categories. So someone with a BAC of equal or less than 0.059 would be considered not intoxicated. That's a high level, and this is some data that we used from a prior study, and we wanted to replicate this with this sample to see how it looked with the other samples. And those BAC ratings were based on a review of the literature at the time, safe drinking guidelines and risky drinking guidelines, international and legal drinking guidelines. So, see if I can make this work. Okay, so a lot of information can be gleaned from this table. So what you see is this is everybody that walked into the ER setting. 92.4% had a BAC reading of not intoxicated. And if you look over under the none, Y90, you see of the 92% that were rated not intoxicated, 83% about were clinically assessed. So a kind of a not good match, but not too bad match. In terms of where the mismatch happened, it looks like some of those people with a BAC as not intoxicated probably were put into the mild category. And maybe they had some more information on those people. Maybe they knew they were drinkers. Maybe they self-reported drinkers. We don't know that. Yep. Okay, and then just people with mild, like 1.2%, were assessed as mildly intoxicated, and their clinical assessment, not such a good match. A perfect match would have been 0.4, but a number of them were assessed as not intoxicated. I'm not Italian either. I'm using my finger here. Okay. Okay, and then in terms of the percent that came in with a moderate level of severity on the BAC, 2.4%, but only 0.8% of them were assessed as moderately intoxicated. Again, more of them were in the lower category. And the last is it. 4% had a BAC reading as severe or very severe, and again, they fell into the very severe, severe, or moderate categories. So just some descriptive information. Okay, so some more information that can be gleaned from this is when you look at the diagonal. So those are the matches, none, none, mild, mild, moderate, moderate. And when you add across that way, you get like 95% of them were, in agreement. So that's not too bad for everybody that walked into the clinic. The agreement's not too bad there. So I forgot to mention, we also did these. Oh, let me get here. Okay, before I move on. Another way of knowing how well the agreement is to look at the endpoints of the arrows. So of the 92% that were clinically, or BAC, not intoxicated, the none category had like almost 85%. And so you can see that the endpoints of those arrows, you can see where the discordance happens. Okay. Now we tested the concordance using the Taub, and it was 0.54. That's just moderately good overall. We also ran all of these tests by each of the nine countries to get a sense of how they looked, if they looked different, looked similarly. And we found that the Dominican Republic and Guyana had poor concordance estimates. So we pulled them out and reran the Taube estimates, and you could see it went up a bit. So some differences, some influence by country-wide. Oops. Okay, we recut those BAC cut points based on newer definitions of high-risk drinking, legal settings. And I'm not going to go through all of this table again, but if you look at the endpoints of the arrows, and maybe I should say a little bit about the BAC. Now, in the prior, the none category was 0.059. So the three top categories, we bumped them up so that there were the thresholds were lower. And when you look at the endpoints of the arrows, you can see that the concordance was a little better. You know, we play around with a lot of BAC levels, but in the end, it has to make sense. You know, those severity ratings on the Y91 have to make sense with the BAC reading. So it was exploratory. You know, And again, we ran it with the two countries taken out separately and then together, and you can see. Oh, under this new categorization of the BAC, you see that the Salby went up to 0.68 from the 0.54 earlier. And again, when we removed the outlying countries, those with the lower concordance, that rating went up to 73. Okay. So now we're going to move on to the people who reported drinking within the 6 hours of the injury event, and that's the group probably we're the most interested in. So, let me see. Here we see about 47% of those persons who had been drinking prior to the injury event had a BAC reading of not intoxicated. 23%. Now you can see the spread of the scores in terms of the mismatch. A little bit more mismatch there than we saw when we looked at the whole sample. Same thing here. Same thing here. For the most part, the clinical assessment is rating intoxication lower on all of those than the actual BAC. And when we look at the when we read along the diagonal here, the actual matches. These add up to 50%, and that compares to 85% when you looked at everybody that came in. So these estimates aren't so concordant when you're looking at the people who have been drinking around the injury incident. And again, you look at the endpoints of those arrows, and you can see some matching, some mismatching. More importantly, you look at the Taub B. Well, that moved. Okay. The Dow B was 0.48, and that's not very good at all. Okay. So, with the Y90 and the Y90, you would expect some variation based on a lot of other factors, and these could include things like the skill of the person administering that assessment. Were they well trained? Was this a chaotic ER room? Was this an understaffed ER room? That could vary the assessment. Cross-cultural variations in drinking could vary that Y91 assessment. Is this a wet culture or a dry culture? If it's a wet culture, maybe I would not see someone as intoxicated as if I were assessed in a dry culture. Also, the BACs can change, whether they're on the ascending and descending. That, as someone else said, the time between the BAC reading or the drinking, the injury, and the time that it takes to get to the ER could factor into air. And let me see. And patient tolerance. And that patient tolerance is a big thing that really confounds some of these concordance estimates. So if you have someone, as an example, that goes to dinner, rarely drinks, shares a half a bottle of wine, whoops, there's a jump with somebody, compared to someone who drinks rather frequently and rather heavily, their level of intoxication, I apologize for this, would look very different. And so tolerance is probably one of the biggest. I thought I was so clever in doing these arrows. I get so nervous that when I use the little pointer, it's like jumping all over. So that I'll use arrows. Arrows didn't work so well. Okay. So we looked at gender. So we ran all those concordance tests again, but stratified on gender, stratified on the RAPS, and here we used the RAPS as a measure of dependence. So minus sign means they were negative on the dependence. Positive means positive on dependence. We looked at drug use, positive or negative. That had happened in the prior 6 hours. Tolerance, and the tolerance question came from the DSM, which says, does it take more to get drunk than it used to? It's not quite like that. Or does you need to drink more than you used to get the same effect, or less than you used to get the same effect? And something I've added in that some prior studies haven't done, I looked at daily drinking. Didn't pay attention to how much, just were you a daily drinker, thinking that might have something to do with tolerance. And then I looked at 12-plus monthly drinker and 5-plus weekly drinker. And it was the heavy drinking things. If you were a heavy drinker, either 12-plus monthly or 5-plus weekly, your concordance estimates were far lower than those who didn't report that. So you can really see how tolerance confounds those estimates. Okay. I should get clever. Okay. So the take-home message, you know, we're getting ready to do the ICD-11, and they're looking at the Y90, Y91 codes and saying, hey, you know, should these be altered? Should something be done? They're not being used a lot. They mostly have been used in the ER studies. But they have value, you know, and as researchers out there, you know, if someone's coming in for an ED injury, it would be nice to know if it's drinking related. So it seems like it should be retained. Are they capturing the same phenomena? I apologize for this. I should have practiced this showing up. It depends on how you look at it. When you look at everybody that walked into that clinic or into that ER setting, all people who reported an injury within the prior 6 hours, it did pretty good at saying, no, you weren't a drinker. So it did a good job of that. And if you didn't look at severity levels, if you just looked at whether they had a positive BAC and they had any level on the Y90 clinical assessment, it did pretty good at that too. So it seems to be doing pretty good at saying yes or no. Cross-cultural reliability, we saw that there was some variation. We saw a couple outlying countries. So, you know, we've done a whole lot more than I've covered here in this, in terms of analysis in this discussion today. But we tend to agree with Robin Room, who is far more closer to this than I am, that we should probably keep the Y91 code, but maybe do something different with it. And the fact that those tolerance questions seem to really mask the heavy drinking, other people have suggested, in addition to just doing the clinical signs, which someone has to be trained to do, that maybe you should ask what's your usual drinking and how often do you usually drink and did you drink in the last 6 hours? And maybe that would make the assessment better. Maybe more people would use it. That's it.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Jane?
Yeah. I'm thinking that really only a person who's in a bar can really do this. I mean, honestly, you know, because I'm thinking, you know, my mother used to have a bar and so on, so she to this day, she still gets out, who's drunk and who's not. So I think that would be the difficulty, is to tell apart how much alcohol a person has had, and at least those mild, moderate, severe. That would be. If they, you know, you can tell them that I thought yes, they're very drunk, but to differentiate, you really have to have expertise in knowing how much a person's drunk.
Yeah, and that's what they found. That's very good at the non-drinkers,
yeah.
those that were very severe. But when you get in the middle,
yeah,
not so easy to do. And Cheryl has done that sort of study.
Well, I would just add that these were the data from the Americas, but we did this. This is something that WHO put in their studies initially, and so we had studies in 12 countries. And it turned out that Billyruth, which is White Russia, they had excellent concordance. I mean, they knew what they were doing because they were so used to having drunks come into the emergency department. I mean, they just had this down to a fine point. And other places that, you know, just don't have that kind of experience and they don't have the expertise. And so, you know, they didn't do quite so well. You had a question.
Yeah, how is it as far as tracking? So when they put this data into, say, the computer systems or something like that, this was done specifically because you were doing a
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
And so they were basically saying, oh, every person comes with an injury, grab the form, we're doing the
study. Yep.
In real life, the ERs, I mean, we chatted about this briefly yesterday, if someone has an injury, that after all, talk patients so far down on ICD-9, which I think was really good here, we're not going to
they just, yeah.
So, go to 11, which is skip 10.
they are, yeah.
Yeah, the 303.01 is what we use for ICD-9 for alcohol. So that just gets caught so far down that it's not even reasonable. And then I guess the second thing is because there's programs that work like sober centers, we get a lot of the people who are getting intoxicated don't go to the ERs. We did over 5,000 encounters last year. That just comes straight to sober centers. The only thing you can use alcohol, and I know like in Seattle and San Diego and Portland and a bunch of us will have them. We're taking a lot of these people out of the ERs. Hopefully that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been one of these people coming in as an injury. Basically, this was needs to suffer up for hours.
Yeah.
So we don't capture that wall because they don't let us fill out the paperwork the hospital has, so we can't capture.
That's really sad. Yeah.
You had a question.
Yes, I forgot to say that. They were blind, the BAC reading.
Found in our ER studies where we compare self-report drinking prior to the event with the blood alcohol concentration based on our breathalyzer, that the agreement is very high. In fact, what we find is that a lot of people report drinking prior to the injury and had a negative BAC because of the length of time between drinking prior to the event and by the time they get to the emergency department and we breathalyze them. So we actually found in the opposite direction. We found, though, for those who were positive on BAC, really less than 1% denied drinking. So we feel fairly confident with the self-report. We have found that it seems to really be very robust in all of our analysis. Other questions? Yeah.
Yeah, the sensitivity seemed very good to me in terms of not versus yes. I agree. You say more? You disagreed? Yes, it was 90. Actually, it was 90. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, just to reinforce that in those first slides that Jane showed, it was the high concordance was all being driven by people who hadn't been drinking, which isn't really what we want. Yes.
Point
six.
Yes. Yes.
And as you know, by the time someone gets to 0.08, they're adjusted relative risk of motor vehicle crash 2.5 times somebody with a BAC of 0. In fact, the risk starts to go up over 0.02.
Mm-hmm.
Above that, it starts increasing risk. So the point is that the population attributable fraction, if you will, of motor vehicle crashes for people that are under 0.08, but with alcohol on. So I guess there's two points that I'm making is that I'm not so sure that the concordance is as good as you show because, in fact, a lot of those people did have alcohol on board and were likely, they weren't legally intoxicated by European standards, but not by U.S. standards, but they are there. So, I don't know if you want to comment on that.
well, maybe, do you know how many were there? Because it's people who hadn't been drinking at all up to that level, so I don't recall offhand what proportion.
Well, part of this, compared to the THC versus the assessment of intoxication rather than drinking or not. So the level of intoxication, you might argue that, the hormone 2 won't be a person intoxicated.
I mean, the other problem with this is that intoxication is a subjective phenomenon, okay?
Yes.
So, in visual, in determining someone visually whether they're intoxicated, maybe you should switch to do things like tolerance, but tolerance only affects things that have to do with level of alertness and awakeness. It doesn't have to do with how you perform on psychomotor tasks. So that somebody who drinks a lot may be more awake at a high given the age of doesn't. But they're arguably increased risk of a crash because they're more awake to drive a car, they're maybe less aware, can go both ways. So again, I actually want to come back to the recommendations of the DHD,
okay.
Also historical questions, which I agree with Cheryl, are actually probably a lot more accurate at determining someone's likely risk of an adverse outcome than somebody looking at somebody and then trying to determine if they're intoxicated.
Yeah.
So it may not be much.
Yeah.
One of the things that went into the science of brain people, where we did other analysis that are presented here that looked at what relationships, which of the signs are the most influential in determining which level of perception that they're put into. I believe it was smell is the strongest predictor of that. So, which is one thing we can't do.
By
the time you get the smell,
you're,
you know, you've got three times.
I don't know
how
that works.
I agree.
Yeah. It really depends. If they've just been drinking right before they come in, then they're going to smell like alcohol and maybe have practically zero BAC right at that point because, it hasn't, ascended yet. But, yeah, I think your points are very well taken. And certainly these clinical signs didn't include a lot of the problems that would go into causing accidents, for example, motor vehicular accidents. We did try to train all these clinicians in how to do this assessment, but it was not the best training. So, perhaps if they were trained better, like the people in Billy Ruth, it might have been better. Any other questions? Well, thank you for coming to such a late session.